Before Dave starts my time, just let me say I appreciate the congregation here being willing to host the discussion. It's just a Bible study where both sides are fairly heard, not a contest. You're going to hear both sides of the equation. We're going to try to present our views, and you go home and study it out for yourself. Kind of like the Bereans did in Acts 17, verse 11. And if you want to get my charts, you can go to that website, which has already been announced. Or if you want to contact me later, there's my phone number or my email address. Greg started out by saying that basically all the passages that perhaps I would bring up, like the one in Acts 8 and the eunuch, and I will bring up passages if I have time, are concerning adults, and so they don't really bear on the issue today, tonight. But really, Greg, isn't that an admission that baptism is only for adults? Because you say all of these passages dealing with baptism are just talking about what to do if an adult wants to be baptized. Well, as a matter of fact, every passage that is talking about baptism is only dealing with adults in the sense that we're talking about adults in this discussion. Let me give you an illustration. Suppose a college says, and they do, that you must have a high school diploma and pass an entrance exam to get in. I guess Greg is going to insist, I'm entering my infant into this college because those requirements are only for adults. So the college says you've got to pass high school, pass this entrance exam, and Greg says, no, I'm entering my infant because those qualifications are only for adults. How would that work, Greg? That's exactly what you're doing tonight. The qualifications for a person to be baptized rules out infants. And so all of those passages that do that, you say, well, that's only for adults. Well, duh, of course. That's because only adults, in the sense we're talking about, meet the requirements for baptism. Then Greg continued with his speech. He basically said that God deals with man through covenants. And it's true that God made a covenant with the nation of Israel. I don't know for sure, but I suppose this is why infants were circumcised back then. But Greg would agree with me that the new covenant is not an agreement with a nation as the old covenant was. Right, Greg? It's not an agreement with a nation like the United States or England or anything like that. It's obvious he doesn't think so because he doesn't try to baptize children in the USA. Even if their parents are not Christians, he doesn't try to do that. And neither, Greg, my friend, is the new covenant an agreement with families as families. Today in the New Testament, the new covenant, God deals with each person on an individual basis. Mark 16, 15 and 16, Jesus said, go you into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. All families that believe and are baptized shall be... Oh, I misquoted that. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. So the commandment is not to baptize nations like it was under the Old Testament. We're talking about circumcision there. The commandment is not to baptize families. The commandment is to baptize individuals. Individuals, that's how God deals with people under the new covenant, not families. Now he asked, everybody turn in their Bibles because I don't have enough of the passage here quoted. He wanted me to show this difference in the Old Testament, the Old Covenant, and the New Covenant, which I just did, I think, in the critical point about baptism and how God deals with individuals today, not a nation, and not with families, as he's asserting. But let's notice one of the sentinel passages on the difference or the transition of Old Covenant to New Covenant, beginning in Hebrews chapter 8, verse 8. And it's a quote from Jeremiah 31, verse 31 and following. It says, for finding fault with them, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel, with the house of Judah. So Jeremiah and Hebrews 8 are saying there's going to be a new covenant. We're talking about the covenant we're under, not the old covenant. Not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day when I took them by the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt, because they continue not in my covenant, and I regarded them not, saith the Lord. Notice, Greg, audience, that this new covenant is not going to be according to the old covenant, meaning in our terminology down south, where we're a little bit less educated, it's not going to be the same, Greg. Not according to that covenant, it's not going to be the same. Verse 10. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, saith the Lord. I will put my laws into their mind and write them in their hearts, I will be to them a God, and they shall be to me a people. And then the verse I have on the chart, verse 11, which is critical, because this tells us one of the major differences between New Covenant and Old Covenant. And they shall not teach every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, know the Lord, for all shall know me, from the least to the greatest. Now, on the surface, that might sound a little confusing. Aren't we supposed to be out, Joshua Gertler, out trying to teach your neighbor? And it says, oh, don't do that. No, that's not what it's saying. It's saying the difference in the Old Covenant and the New Covenant is, once a person is in that New Covenant, you won't have to teach him, because he already knows Christ once he gets into the New Covenant. In the Old Covenant, somebody was born, we might say, into the family. When they were born, they were circumcised at 8 days. They were part of the children of Israel, we might say, in the covenant. Greg's right. They weren't necessarily regenerated at that point. They hadn't believed until they got older. So when they, to get them into the covenant, or excuse me, when they needed to be taught. They were in the covenant at 8 days, we might say, but they needed to be taught. The difference is, according to verse 11, in the new covenant, you don't have to teach people. They already know God if they're in the covenant. Do you see that, Greg, from verse 11? I hope you'll try to notice that in one of your speeches. And then he went to Luke 18:15. Let's look at that. Luke 18:15. And you notice at the top I have all three of those texts. They're pretty much the same. The one in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. First of all, he says, so these passages are saying that children are in the kingdom. Okay? That's what he's trying to use these passages to prove. Now, if that were so, Greg, it wouldn't prove infant baptism. What it would do is disprove your theory of original sin. If children are in the kingdom, it's not because they're baptized. It's because they don't inherit original sin. They don't have any sin, and therefore they could be considered in the kingdom because they've never sinned to be separated from God in the first place. So if they're in the kingdom, it would not prove infant baptism. It would disprove original sin. However, I don't think that's what these passages are saying, that the children are in the kingdom just based upon the fact that they never sinned. I don't think it's saying that. Let's look in more detail. Let's look at Matthew 18, 1 through 4 and read that. Now, I think you'll see what these passages are talking about when you're thinking of children, of such is the kingdom. It says, the disciples came unto Jesus saying, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus called a little child unto him and set him in the midst of them and said, verily I say unto you, except you be converted, become as little children, ye shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. It's not saying children are in the kingdom. It says if you want to enter the kingdom, you have to be like a child, in the sense you have to be as humble as a child. Now, I have my youngest child here. Most of you know Wesley. I believe this describes Wesley pretty well. He's humble. Doesn't mean we're not saying he's in the kingdom. This passage is not saying that. It just says if you want to be in the kingdom, you have to be humble like Wesley. That's the sense that we have of such is the kingdom, is that we have to be like a little child. So looking at Luke 18:17 in the context you brought out, Greg, it says, verily I say unto you, whosoever shall not receive the kingdom as a little child shall in no wise enter therein. And that's the same in all three passages you see at the top reference. That's exactly what all three of them are saying, is to receive the kingdom, to enter the kingdom, we have to do it as a little child. As a little child. Not that little children are in the kingdom. If they were, it would be on the basis of original sin is not true. But we're supposed to enter the kingdom as a little child. The humility of the child is the key. You can't be a member of Christ's kingdom unless you have the humility of a child. Now, none of these three texts, these parallel texts, Greg, say that children were to be baptized. If they did say that, then you'd have a point, but they don't. And I suggest to you that Jesus missed a golden opportunity here to tell us about infant baptism if that's what he desired to take place. In all three cases, they were bringing little children to him. The disciples objected to it. Maybe they felt like he didn't have time for it. He says, no, let them come. They were brought to him physically. And he used it as an illustrating point. To become a member of my kingdom, you have to be as a little child, meaning humble, like a little child. Jesus could have said, and you should baptize them, but he didn't. You don't find any record of Jesus, his disciples, or the apostles and disciples after Jesus left this world of any infant baptisms at all. Now, in Ephesians 6, verse 1, the children there are told to obey their parents. Okay? And Greg said, well, that proves children are in the kingdom because the book is written to saints. Well, let's see if that's really conclusive. My precious niece is here today, Sophia. She's 15 years old. She's actually my great niece, so she's the daughter of my niece, Carol's niece, Amy. She's a child. She's Amy's child. She's 15 years old, and she was baptized just a week or so ago. So she's to obey Ephesians 6, verse 1. Sophia is. Children, obey your parents in the Lord. But she's not an infant. She's a Christian. She was baptized at 15, almost 16 years old. So that argument is definitely not conclusive. Sophia proves it's not conclusive, Greg. And in a debate, only conclusive arguments will hold up. And then he talked about household baptisms. Let's talk about that. So I'm not sure if he mentioned anyone in particular, but I think there are 4 household baptisms in the New Testament. But I'm suggesting to you that households, Thayer defines that as the inmates of a house, all persons forming one family, a household, do not always contain infants. And Greg himself quoted Hebrews 11, verse 7, by faith, Noah prepared an ark to the saving of his house. There we have the same word. How many infants were in that house in Hebrews 11, 17? Noah, his wife, his 3 sons, and their 3 wives. Here we have that word household or house. There wasn't an infant. Greg quoted this passage, but it goes against your position that households include infants. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 7. To save time, let's look in the case of a couple of these household baptisms. Look at Cornelius. Remember, we'll say his household was baptized according to Greg's position. But look at Acts 10, verse 2. It says, a devout man and one that feared God with all his house. So the household of Cornelius that was baptized at the end of chapter 10 was a household that feared God with all his house. Does everybody see that in Acts chapter 10, verse 2? Does it look like that household included infants? If it says that this household that was baptized feared God with all his house. Doesn't look like it to me. You skip down to chapter 10, verse 46, you see then that Cornelius' household spoke in tongues and magnified God. Does that sound like infants? And then if you look at chapter 11, verses 17 through 18, Cornelius' household believed on Jesus and repented. So the same household that was baptized feared God, spoke in tongues and magnified God, and believed on Jesus and repented. Does that sound like that household included infants? Now, you can look at the rest of these yourself, but let's get down to Crispus. I believe it's Stephanus' household. I believe it's in 1 Corinthians 1 that Paul said he baptized Stephanus' household. But I want you to turn to 1 Corinthians 16, verse 15, and notice that it says something here also about that same household. Stephanus' household was baptized, 1 Corinthians 1, about verse 15 or 16. But in 1 Corinthians 16, verse 15, it says, I beseech you, brethren, you know the household of Stephanus, that it is the first fruits of Achaia, and that they have addicted themselves to the ministry of the saints. So the same household that was baptized in 1 Corinthians 1 was addicted to the ministry of the saints. Does that sound like infants? No. Infants can't fear God. Infants can't addict themselves to the ministry. Infants can't speak in tongues. Infants can't repent, believe in Jesus. These households did not include infants. Let's do just one little test before we stop. I want each person in this audience to raise your hand if you represent a household. Okay? I only want one person from each household. Mr. Dale, raise your hand. One person from each household to raise your hand. So it looks like we're looking at somewhere between 20 and 25 households here. Except we'll have to subtract one. Wesley raised his hand, but maybe he did it for Carol. 20 or 25 households here, if each household raised their hand. Now, of these households, of the people who raised their hand, raise your hand if you have an infant in your household. An infant basically is, I have the definition of another chart, a little child that's not walking yet. That's the dictionary, English dictionary definition for an infant. A child that's not walking yet, that's what we mean by an infant. Now, he's talking about somebody younger than that. What age do you baptize these infants as a general rule, Greg? Month, 2 months? Okay, but let's just say what the dictionary says. An infant is a child that's not walking yet. If you raised your hand to represent a household, now raise it if you have an infant by the definition of the English dictionary. He's not walking yet. Zero. So out of 21, you have one, sir. Out of 20 or 25 households represented in this audience, we have one household that has an infant in it by the English definition, a child that's not walking yet. And that's a pretty good definition. That's about what I think of as an infant, a child, a toddler if he's starting to walk, right? Now, so let's think about that. Out of 20 or 25 households, there's one household here with an infant. And then Greg comes up here. He sees it in the Bible that a household was baptized, and he suggests to you that that's proof that infants are baptized. When on the average from this audience, only about one out of 20 or 25 households have an infant in it. How can that be conclusive? Greg, let's explore that just a little bit more if I can find that chart. So household baptism, because I've debated Greg on this before and I've never been able to get him across to him the point that for his argument to be conclusive, household baptisms mean infants were baptized. For it to be conclusive, to prove his point, that would have to mean every household has to include infants. I hadn't been able to get him across to him that point. That's a simple point of logic, but he doesn't understand it. So I made up this little syllogism, logic. And Jeff's supposed to tell me what kind of logic it is, but he didn't tell me. If a carnally minded saint were trying to show God approves of X-rated movies, he could have this syllogism to try to prove that. Major premise: God approves of good, clean entertainment. Minor premise: all movies are good, clean entertainment. Conclusion: God approves of all movies, which would include X-rated movies. So in a syllogism, you have a major and a minor premise, and the conclusion is supposed to follow because both of the major and the minor premise are true. It's called a valid syllogism if it does that. Now, I'll assure you this is a valid syllogism. So if this thing is valid, it is. If the major and minor premise are true, then according to this logic, X-rated movies are approved of by God. Now, Greg, you don't agree with God approves of X-rated movies, do you? Which premise is wrong here? The major or the minor premise? I believe it's the minor premise, all movies are good, clean entertainment. That's where it falls. Now let's look at the same parallel with infant baptism. Major premise, households were baptized. Greg proved that. That's true. Minor premise, all households include infants. Conclusion, therefore infants were baptized. You see, that's what the syllogism would have to be to prove infants were baptized. But this second syllogism has the same problem as the first syllogism. In the first one, it shouldn't say all movies are good, clean entertainment. It should say very few movies are good, clean entertainment. And that's where the syllogism falls. And in the second syllogism, it says all households include infants. It should say very few households include infants. So by the same reasoning, oh, by the way, there's my definition for infant, especially before he or she is walking. You see that? A baby. Greg, by the same reasoning that you prove that infants were baptized just because because we have household baptisms, then the carnally minded saint could prove that God approves of X-rated movies by the exact same reasoning. The problem is that households do not all contain infants. For your argument to be conclusive, they would have to all contain infants. Because it says households were baptized, therefore infants are? No, the great majority of households do not contain infants. Now, let's go back, and I think it's number 17, which I skipped. Pat's proof texts are only dealing with adults. Greg, I didn't read the bottom of the chart. I agree 100%. Only adults can meet the prerequisite requirements of baptism. Acts 8, 36 and 37. The eunuch said, "See, here is water. What doth hinder me to be baptized?" And Philip said, "If thou believest with all thine heart, thou mayest." That implies that if he does not believe with all his heart, he may not be baptized. An infant, through no fault of his own, cannot believe. Therefore, he's not qualified to be baptized, according to Philip in this text. Mark 16, 16, Jesus said, "He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved." So an infant cannot scripturally be baptized because he doesn't believe. Acts 2, 38, "Repent and be baptized for the remission of sins." An infant cannot be baptized scripturally because he's got to repent first to be baptized scripturally. And in Acts 2, 41, it says, "Then they that gladly received his word were baptized." An infant cannot receive the word. Hear, understand, commit to the word, and obey the word. Therefore, he cannot be scripturally baptized. Thank you very much.